Support for WPR comes from Viterbo University. Offering 1 to 2 year master's degree programs in business administration, healthcare leadership, and servant leadership. Viterbo.edu/graduate.
Support for WPR comes from Focus on Energy. Committed to helping Wisconsinites focus on the planet by making smart energy choices. Energy resources for Earth Day and every day can be found at focusonenergy.com.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Mike Arnold.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up after 4, we'll hear about Wisconsinites vying for gold in this year's Winter Olympics.
But first, when it comes to happiness, study after study finds that people without children are happier than their counterparts with kids. But people with children report something that's a little harder to describe: joy.
Our guest writes about that contradiction in her book, All Joy and No Fun, The Paradox of Modern Parenthood. Jennifer Senior joins us now. She's a contributing editor at New York Magazine. Jennifer, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
So what kind of evidence have you seen that people without kids are happier than people with kids?
Without kids? Oh, there's a very robust body of evidence, unfortunately. And it doesn't tend to be that they're necessarily happier. It's more that kids have zero effect on their parents' happiness, or a slight negative. And that's a robust kind of finding in the social sciences that goes back at least 50 years, but probably more like 60. There was one in 1957 that started it all, called The Transition to Parenthood. Called Parenthood as Crisis. And it's kept going ever since. And social scientists will find this even when they're not looking for it. Perhaps the most notable study was in 2004, where women who were working unwittingly ranked childcare as 16th out of 19 out of things that they enjoyed doing, and they didn't even know what they were being, you know, tested for. So, I mean, it does kind of repeatedly show up, but I think that these numbers tell only a partial story, as you very rightly pointed out in your intro, and as I try to, you know, elaborate on in my book.
Well, it's interesting because I'm guessing a lot of people with children would say that they chose to have children. These are among the people who did choose to do that, but that they thought having children would make them happier. So what do people with kids say about how they feel when they become parents? What happens?
Well, it's funny. I mean, what people say and what they kind of unconsciously report when they're filling out surveys are two different things. I think that if you ask parents about meaning and what gives them purpose and structure, they will all say that it's their kids. And I think that there's another very good study that's out right now that actually suggests that parents are kind of recruiting from a bigger emotional range. They experience more highs and more lows, which makes a lot of sense. And whether they will talk about the lows, I think, depends on the parent. They will certainly talk about the highs. I would point out that, you know, walking into parenthood expecting happiness is a little weird. You know, we didn't really come to expect happiness until the 20th century, about anything. I mean, you know, I think people who kind of walk into parenthood thinking that they're going to be adding complexity and meaning to their life and a sense of duty and obligation might be better positioned to really luxuriate in it.
Well, when people talk about joy, that is something that seems to go, as you say, hand in hand with parenthood. People report deeper satisfaction, feelings that are harder to articulate, those deeper feelings. And yet in these happiness studies, it's been a hot field lately, parenting comes up as something that makes people marginally unhappy in their day-to-day lives. So how can it do both those things? How can it bring you joy and deep satisfaction and also make you kind of unhappy?
Right. Well, because I think moment to moment, there is obviously a ton of stress associated with parenting. And I mean, there are characters in my book whose stress is just so poignant and so brilliantly articulated by them in terms of, you know, day-to-day anxieties about, am I spending enough time with my children? Am I spending the right kind of time with my children? Why isn't my spouse picking up the slack when I feel like I'm doing X, Y, and Z? Why is it that when I'm in my house, I feel like it's a video game and everything is flying at me at 50,000 miles an hour and I'm simply dodging debris? You know, why do I feel like I'm not good enough? You know, there are lots of things like that. Joy has this weird way of slipping through the sieve of social science simply because I don't think social scientists are in the habit of measuring for it. But I bet if they looked for it, they'd find it. So, you know, as it's currently measured, what happens is this. You know, you, as a parent, you know, you're filling out a questionnaire, let's say, and you rate on a scale of 1 to 5 how your evening was with your friends, let's say, having a really nice dinner. You rate it a 5. Then, you know, your kid looks at you, as mine did about half a year ago, and said, he was 5.5, and he said to me, you know, Mom, when I was born, I was so glad that it was you, because that's really who I would have wanted to be my parent. I'm glad it wasn't someone else. Now, I would also rate that moment a 5, but it's not the same 5. It's a totally different 5. And 5 that is all that's available to me on a survey, right? They're not measuring transcendence on those surveys. So you have this fluky thing that's not on, like, you know, Amazon.com, you know, like Amazon ratings, or like 50 Shades of Grey gets a 5 and Anna Karenina gets a 5. But, you know, one is kind of like a very transcendent experience, and the other one's like a good erotic read, you know.
Right. So 5 does not begin to cover it, basically.
Right, exactly. And I think when, if, you know, people chose to measure awe and transcendence and purpose, they'd find different measurements for parents. They would. I really do think so.
Yeah, so I guess we need 50 Shades of 5 on these surveys, is what you're saying.
That's awesome. That should be like a tweet or a something.
Well, you spend time with middle-class families across the country to see what the daily lives in these families are like and how this paradox that we're talking about plays out. Can you tell us about some of these families?
Oh, yeah. So my favorite, my absolute favorite, I mean, there are many, but I think the ones who capture people's kind of sentiments the most, and it seems that everybody sees themselves in this couple, are these two people, Angie and Clint. And they have this very hard kind of job because they're shift workers. So Angie is a psychiatric nurse and works at night, and Clint works the morning shift at the Minneapolis St. Paul Airport, renting, you know, at a car rental desk. And so they each feel like single parents, right? They're each, like, working, and then they come home and they take care of the kids alone. So they each feel their own sense of resentments and their own, like, oh, my God, why isn't my spouse, you know, recognizing how hard I work? They each walk around with feelings that many of us do, but it's really exaggerated in their relationship, like to the power of 10. So people tend to relate to them, but they particularly relate to the last kind of portion of this chapter where I say to Angie, just as like kind of an offhand question, I said to her, so where do you feel like, do you feel like you're a better mother or a better nurse? And she said, oh, a better nurse. You know, I said, do you think you're a good mother? And she said, sometimes. And Angie at work is a psychiatric nurse, so you have to figure she's like getting, you know, she's dealing with psychotics who are like screaming and biting and kicking, yet she feels more in control there than she does in her home. Clint works at a desk. Like, that's what he does. And I asked him, where do you feel more comfortable? And he said, at home. I'm the standard at home. I am the standard.
So what does that say?
Well, so many women have written to me saying, I can't imagine ever saying I'm the standard. Like, they feel so tyrannized by other standards out there, like Tiger Mom, or like the zillions of parenting books that they get that tell them they're doing everything wrong, or, you know, parenting message boards, or the perfect family that they see on Facebook as they're scrolling down, where everything looks like they're doing it, where everyone looks like they're doing everything right. You know, whereas I think Clint, I mean, he said so much to me by simply saying, look, my dad left my family when I was 7. You know, so he's already doing more than his dad ever did. And he is not tyrannized by some outside standard. You know, there's no guilt associated with his parenting. There's no guilt associated with his going to work every day.
But he's an outlier, isn't he? I mean, for most of us, as you write about, there's all these articles, an onslaught of them talking about how parents can mess up their kids by yelling at them or doing things wrong, and there are certain windows that you need to take advantage of or they close. It's sort of a time that's fraught with anxiety, especially for new parents. So how come most people don't feel like Clint?
Because, I mean, well, first of all, I'm not sure how many people internalize all those messages. I think my takeaway from that, and it certainly seems to be borne out in data, in lots of data, is that men aren't quite so hard on themselves in this way. particularly when it comes to their parenting, that they do not have experienced the same anxieties and pressures to do full immersion parenting and to do everything exactly right. And I mean, you know, I think those articles get a lot of attention. There's a lot of conflicting data about, you know, what our actual influence is on our kids. I mean, people are still arguing about whether nature and nurture are, you know, which one is more kind of powerful. I mean, so, you know, I can't really speak to, you know, parenting itself because I wrote a book about parents and how they experience parenthood. But I do think that Clint's attitude isn't so, you know, foreign. I found that fathers were often pretty forgiving of themselves. It was mothers who were just, like, tyrannized by, you know, June Cleaver. And, you know, again, I go back to just thinking about, like, think about the Tiger Mom book and how much, what a driver of anxiety that was. You know, it was huge.
Well, we're talking right now to Jennifer Senior. She's a contributing editor at New York Magazine and the author of the new book, All Joy and No Fun, The Paradox of Modern Parenthood.
And you can join in the conversation right now. Are you a parent who's identifying with this conversation? Did becoming a parent make you less happy but more something else? We'd like to know what that something else is. Is the joy enough to compensate for the loss of day-to-day happiness? Well, call us and join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Mike Arnold.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking about the all joy and no fun paradox of modern parenting. Our guest, Jennifer Senior, looks at how having children affects parents in their day-to-day lives and their happiness levels.
And you can join in the conversation. Are you a parent who identifies with what you're hearing right now? Did becoming a parent make you a little less happy but a little more joyful? Is joy enough to compensate for the loss of day-to-day happiness? You can call and join the conversation. The number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can post at the Central Time Facebook page.
Let's go to our phones first. We've got Nate on the line from Oconomowoc. Hi, Nate.
Hey. Yeah, I just wanted to say that I totally identify with Clint, and I don't think that he's an outlier at all. I'm a new parent of a firstborn. She's 6 months old. And I work as a swim coach, and so my work is primarily, like, after school lets out. That's when I coach. And so I take care of the baby all day, and then I drop her off at Y Care while I'm at work, and my wife picks her up and takes care of her at night. So, the situation is really, really similar. And my wife read all the books about, like, what to expect when you're expecting and what to expect in the first year. And she totally wigs out about how, you know, we're missing, you know, whatever we're missing. And I just feel like I'm doing the best job I can. And that's got to be good enough because that's all I can really do. So I think that a lot of, you know, I really agree that a lot of men probably feel that way about their parenting. They're just doing the best job they can. And there's no sense worrying about it any more than that. So.
Nate, how would you rate your levels of happiness since before you had your daughter and now 6 months into it?
You know, I would say I'm pretty much just as happy, but I'm happy about a lot different things. You know, I'm more happy about, like, my interactions, you know, with my daughter and with my family, and not so much about, like, things that I do on my own, about interactions with friends or stuff. It's just become, it's not so much that there's more or less, there's really about the same. It's just, you know, it's more about family now. So,
okay, yeah, so it's shifted a little.
Yeah, it just shifted. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
All right, well, thank you so much for calling and sharing your story, Nate. And we do have an open line for you. You can tell us what you think about how parenting has affected your life. Has it made you day-to-day a little bit less happy in that you sort of feel like you're in the thick of a battle, things flying around, feeling out of control, but you feel more joyful? And are you okay with that trade-off? Are you okay trading joy for maybe a little bit of day-to-day happiness? Our number, 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And Jennifer, what do you think about what Nate had to say?
I love Nate. And I think what Nate said when he said, I think that's got to be good enough. I mean, I just wish that I could, like, put that on a T-shirt and mail it to every mother who feels like she's not quite up to snuff. I mean, I think his attitude is so beautiful and so right and no less loving or caring than any other parent out there. I think that, you know, you can hear that he's delighted and he's trying as hard as he can, and that's got to be enough because, you know, that's he's giving what he can give. And as opposed to, like, feeling like you're falling short of every mark in every parenting book that you've taken the care to read, and often those parenting books themselves are offering this plague of conflicting advice. I think the other thing he said that was kind of brilliant, and that I should mention, was when he said that there's kind of just been a shift in his focus about what makes him happy now and what doesn't. There's this great social scientist down in Florida named Roy Baumeister who once said that, no, kids are a tremendous source of happiness. They just turn other things in your life into, and then I can't say that final word.
I think I know what you're going
to
say.
I thought that was kind of, you know, when it's true. Like, suddenly there's a richness to your interaction with your own family and your child, and, you know, there's something else going on. But, you know, you go out with your friends and you're staring at your watch and going, oh, God, I got to get home. You know, there are other, you know, it's just a question of where which bucket you're putting all your energies into.
So are the parents typically okay with this and they're happy with their decisions and joy they feel is a trade up from happiness?
I don't know. You know, I don't think I've ever asked a parent, would you give your kid back? Because I've never really heard a parent even come close to saying that. I mean, it's not like anybody would trade, you know what I mean? This isn't, I don't think of this in terms of a conscious trade. I mean, people become parents because they want children. And, you know, they accept whatever kind of compromises that, you know, that entails. I think sometimes they're brought up short by certain compromises. They don't know that they're coming. And we don't have, and I think that it would behoove all of us to, you know, maybe be more honest about what they are. And I think people would feel less lonely if they knew that they weren't the only ones who were struggling with their marriage once their new baby was in the house, because that's typical. I think that there's all sorts of normed knowledge we could give people. And it's one of the reasons I wrote my book. You know, I wanted everybody to, like, read it and see themselves and go, oh, look at that. I fall right in the middle of the bell curve, you know. I'm not an outlier here. So, you know. That's what I'd say.
Well, let's go back to the phones. Joni is with us next from Ashland. Hi, Joni.
Hello. I'd just like to comment that in my case, with my first child, I really started to gain confidence in myself. My own childhood might not have been very, well, my parents weren't real active in it. I mean, I was the seventh of eight children, so I didn't feel real important, I guess, and I don't know that that's true with everybody, but I was married 5 years already and really wanted that baby, and even though it was a really big job and kind of isolating, I just kind of changed into a different person that I felt important. I enjoyed going out in public, getting a lot of attention from other people because the baby was so cute, and, you know, and I went on to have more children. And it was always difficult, you know, because there was a lot to do, a lot to keep up with, but there was a lot of satisfaction, and I learned how to be less selfish. It changed me as a person.
So a lot of personal growth that came through having children for you, Joni. Thank you so much for calling. And Jennifer, personal growth has got to be something that's satisfying and comes close to joy.
Absolutely, and people talk about it a lot. I mean, I love that comment, too, because it is... Sometimes people forget to sort of talk about this, that kids give you the opportunity to be your finest self. And not only that, but kind of to model things that you want them to emulate, right? And it sounds to me like she drew a lot of self-esteem from this position, particularly after having been seventh out of eighth and having been sort of neglected. Oh, there's also an interesting researcher who looks at life stories, and he says that often men and women talk about, you know, the birth of their first kid as being this powerfully transformative moment, and in many cases, making them grow up themselves, making them kind of give structure to their lives, gaining a sense of agency and purpose and meaning. Also, she said something that has been borne out, which is she went out in the street and everybody would admire the kid. You know, once parents are have kids who are of a certain age, like three and above, they become very embedded in their communities. You know, they start joining school, you know, like neighborhood watch groups and school boards, and they become, their religious attendance often goes up. So there's this kind of embeddedness and structure that starts to happen, which is also really good for your esteem. And, you know, there's all sorts of hidden kind of benefits that one can get.
Well, thanks so much for sharing, Joni. Appreciate you calling. And let's move on to Margaret joining us in Madison. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. I was really wondering if the happiness went up and down with the age of the child or the parent, because you have a brand new baby and you're madly in love, and then after, you know, 3 weeks of not sleeping very well, you're overwhelmed and thinking, what am I doing? Then, you know, they're four and they're adorable, and then they're teenagers and you want to don't know what to do with them. Then when you get to be 60 and 70 adults and they're not in your life so much, but you're still a parent. I'm just wondering, did the happiness level change with different...
All right. Thank you, Margaret. We're losing you a little bit there, but I think we got the gist of your comments. So, Margaret, wondering about whether the happiness level changes as the parents get older, as the children get older, and they're not keeping you up, you know, all at all hours of the night, for instance. What about that, Jennifer?
Yep. I'm glad she asked it, because I, in fact, structured my whole book around this question, around how kids affect their moms and dads at different stages of their lives. So I have, like, a couple of chapters about, you know, what happens to moms and dads when the kids are 0 to 5 years old, and another chapter about what happens when the kids are, like, 6 to 12, and another about what happens when the kids become adolescents. And it is indeed different. And in terms of big longitudinal studies that look at this stuff, you know, it's hard to string these variables apart. But as best as I can tell, what I have discerned is she is right. So 0 to 3, hard. It's hard on your marriage because the transition is very abrupt and it used to be just you two. It's hard because you're not sleeping, and sleeping consigns, and not sleeping consigns you to a different, you know, kind of league of unhappiness, right?
Right.
You know, sleep deprivation is not good for you. And also isolation, you know, until your kids are kind of embedded in the community or in preschools and old enough to go around, you're kind of, you're a little more cut off. So 0 to 3 is harder.
And how about the most happiness, since we've only got about 30 seconds? When does it really max out with the happiness and the joy?
Well, there's a lot of teens from 6 to 12, and I think when parents talk about their adult children, they're like over the moon. And then they describe their grandchildren as like non-calorie chocolate, like the best upside and zero downside money can buy. So that's what I'd say about that.
Excellent. Zero-calorie chocolate. That sounds pretty good. Jennifer, yeah. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
We've been talking to Jennifer Senior, contributing editor at New York Magazine. She's the author of All Joy and No Fun, The Paradox of Modern Parenthood.